Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning. This is New York Brand Lab Radio. It's 10 o'clock in New York. I am Mary Vanderweel, your host today. Every day on, or every week rather, on New York Brand Lab Radio, we talk about brands, we coax out the power and find out what makes them tick. And I am particularly delighted today because I have a very special guest. It's John Drance from Duct Tape Marketing. Good morning, John. How are you?
I am fabulous, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Are you fabulous? Are you calling in from Kansas?
Well, no. I'm going to give you a geography lesson. I'm calling
yes, well,
from,
tell me. Yes, I love knowing where people
from
call
Kansas
in from.
Kansas City, which happens to be in Missouri.
Oh.
I know. It's terribly confusing. Terribly confusing. And there actually is a Kansas City, Kansas as well. But in my
there
particular
is.
Case, I'm in Missouri, yes.
Oh my God! Well, I needed that lesson. I just became an American citizen a few months ago, so I'm still getting my geography into place. So that I need a bit of need a leg up, as
well.
Well,
that's all right. Don't ask me to name the Canadian provinces or anything either. So.
Well, it's so lovely to have you on the show, John. I just want to share with our listeners, you know, many of my guests I've actually never met. We meet somehow, you know, in this
right.
amazing virtual world. And I know you know more about that than I do, but we met at Etsy. John gave a terrific talk and workshop at Etsy, which is one of the fastest growing online marketplaces for creatives and people who make handmade.
Yeah.
And we met, and I said, hey, John, can I get you to share your wisdom on the show? So we're going to talk about
it.
I'd love you to...
Your stunning sense of style that really convinced me as well.
Oh, well, what do you know? What do you know about that? Make my day. Well, I don't know. Maybe that's not... well, listen, thank you.
Well, that's
all
part of the brand, Mary, right?
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, I'm just... what I'd love to do... I'm going to just give a little brief introduction. I'm not going to make it long, because if people don't know who you are, well, then they should know immediately. John runs an amazing business. It's called Duct Tape Marketing. He's written books author of Duct Tape Marketing and The Referral Engine. And you're a system guy, you know. He's created the Duct Tape Marketing System. It's a consulting network that licenses small business marketing consultants around the world. His blog, which I love, is one of Forbes' favorites. Your podcast is a top 10 marketing show on iTunes, and Fast Company calls it a must-listen. John, you write and do workshops for American Express Open Forum, big clients, small business clients, and you're cited often all around the media. So I'm just thrilled to have you here. And I thought maybe we'd talk about, because your toolkit of strategies, solutions, big picture ideas are all for the small business owner. So I thought perhaps today we'd look at the branding piece, that wonderful, well, I hate that word branding. I wish perhaps you could come up with a better word. It's my world, and it's what gets me up every morning with a spring in my step. But I'd just love to get your take on the importance and power of brands. So maybe we can look at that, because I know you do talk about how to stand out, how to differentiate and dominate. So, you know, why don't we make that the theme today, how to differentiate and dominate and how to stand out from the rest of the pack.
I think that's quite frankly, if you're going to say let's find a different word, you know, for brand, it would be marketing strategy. Every business has a brand, you know, regardless of whether or not they
right.
intentionally create it or not, because it's, as you know well, it is simply the collective perception of the market, and that can be a very large perception. Lots of people know about you, or it can be a very small perception. Your 12 clients, you know, have some perception, but you do have a brand. So I think a lot of times the trouble I run up against with small business owners is they think a brand is tied, and it's certainly not them. And I think that's probably the first hurdle to get over, and the way I overcome that hurdle quite often is to start talking about this idea of strategy and differentiation.
Mm-hmm. But, John, I agree that every business has a brand, but there's so many small business owners who sort of think that they don't really have a brand, because they see a brand as only the big guys, right, the Coca-Colas. And, of course, if you have a business or a site or, you know, have a shingle out the front, you know, you have to build on that brand and make it bring it to life, basically, right? Because there's so many brands that say the lights are out. That's what I find so funny.
Well, or probably far more. I mean, the ones that say the lights are out, you know, they probably won't be around for us to talk to much more. But the one that,
right,
that I think is probably far more pervasive is the lights are the exact same color as everyone else in your industry, and in fact, maybe we'll even strive to look like everybody else in our industry. And I think that that's the thing that really holds back even a company that's doing by you know, some measure well. That's the thing that's really holding them back, is that they really aren't doing anything to differentiate, and so consequently, I mean, the market needs a difference, right? So if we're one of those people out there trying to make a decision about whether I should buy from you or engage you, I need some measure of how to tell you're different from others, and if you don't give me one that's meaningful to me, then I'll revert to price, and that's the trap that a lot of small business owners certainly find themselves in.
Well, I think that word meaningful is so key, isn't it? Because there are many measures, but it has to be meaningful to the consumer. Otherwise, it's meaningless, right? So
And that's one half of the differentiation is who are we trying to differentiate or create value for? I mean, who is our ideal client? And I think that's, you know, for me, when I start talking about marketing strategy, it has those two components that certainly then, in my opinion, inform everything else you do, including the traditional sort of branding type of practices. And that is that we can clearly, you know, narrow a focus on an ideal client and then come up with some differentiation that's meaningful to that ideal client. Because there are a lot of companies out there that say, hey, we could choose orange, you know, as our differentiator. Well, is that going to be valuable or meaningful to a specific ideal client? And I think that those two components have to be factored very largely into any discussion about branding or strategy. And I'll go back to that idea of ideal client. You know, for most businesses, what we do at least, spend a great deal of time is helping them really narrow their focus, because that's another challenge, I think, for a lot of small business owners, because if we ask them to narrow, which I think is a very, very positive and strong approach, you know, we're also asking them to take entire chunks of the market that may indeed have money to pay them and say, you're not for us. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest hurdles, because that seems a little scary.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people think that the wider net can bring in more butts in seat or whatever it is that they want, right? But it's going narrow that keeps it tighter. I guess it just makes it easier to be found, right, if you actually stand for one thing.
Not just easier to be found. I think it's actually easier to say, and we charge a premium for what we do, you know, as opposed to, hey, we're 10 cents cheaper than the other guy. And I think that's, you know, the if somebody comes to the conclusion that, boy, you know, Mary's the only one that gets me and that understands what I need, or that works with my industry, or has deep experience and communicates that deep experience in the exact problem that I have, you know, then of course I'm going to rationalize that I should be paying a premium for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's I'm just thinking, I always like to look at the underbelly of brands, right? Because meaning, you know, it's about pulling back the layers to actually understand what that, how people can actually work out whether you are going to be meaningful in terms of helping me and my business, or, you know, that I can actually get you, right? That sort of feeling. So it's a sort of an emotional connection. Let me ask you, John, tell me about that sort of emotional component. Obviously, that's an important part of your strategic thinking. Can you share a little bit about that with us and how you feel about that?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, it's one I love to talk about. That for a lot of businesses, when I start this idea of you have to have a differentiator, you know, quite often they go to their product or their service or their innovation or we provide great service as our differentiator. And in many cases, you know, what they're really communicating are the expectations. I mean, the market expects you to have a good product and provide good service and for it to be fair price. So, you know, those clearly are not differentiators. And what I try to help business owners do is understand, and quite frankly, there's no magic to this. We go out and talk to their customers and say, what do they really do that you appreciate? And nine times out of ten, we have a conversation that goes something like, well, yeah, they provide great service and they provide great pricing and great products, but we expected that. But what they really do that nobody else does is X. You know, they call us back in, you know, within 24 hours. They clean up the job site every day. Their people are just so friendly. I mean, it's all those kind of little, as you identified, emotional things. And there's a connection to, you know, we really love what they stand for. We really love their people. It's more about why they do, and they're able to communicate why they do what they do as opposed to what it is that they do, you know, product or service-oriented. And so for many businesses, what I kind of call real-life marketing strategies really do
yes.
come about in communicating this single-minded purpose or simplicity or convenience or inspiration. I mean, all these things that could be talked about as personalities or emotions. And I think when you can find and tap and communicate that's where the real power of a marketing strategy resides.
So when you, it's the power of making that emotional connection.
Yeah, I mean, I think that own case, companies that you love to love. In many cases, it may be that you like their products or services, but you also like what they stand for. A lot of cases, and everybody can define what that means in many, many ways. But for example, many people are very drawn to Apple. Because they're incredible design, and that single-minded kind of idea, you know, is something that really draws people to them. There's another software company I love to cite all the time called 37 Signals. They produce some online tools like Basecamp and HiRise as a CRM tool, but a lot of people are very attracted both to their product, but also to kind of their story that they tell about simplicity, and that they actually work harder to keep features out of their software than to put them in.
Yeah.
And they run their business that way. Their office is in Chicago. You go there, and their business, their office, their whole brand is about simplicity. And people, regardless of what they produce, they know that the next product that they put out is going to represent this idea of simple yet powerful tool. And so I think people actually are more attracted to that element of the brand, or certainly as attracted to that element of the brand, and like to talk about that element of the brand more than they really want to talk about how great their products are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, it's in a way your brand is the feeling people have when you leave the room or something, isn't it? It's sort of like an energy.
Yeah, and a lot of times that happens organically just because of who the company owner or founder is, or who they're being, and how they or how the culture is built. I mean, certainly we could spend a lot of time talking about brands that are very strong just because the culture inside the organization and what the company founders like to do and how they like to be and who they like to hire can actually be a very, very large part of the marketing strategy. Another company that happens to be ironically in Chicago as well, Threadless, is a T-shirt, essentially a T-shirt maker, but they open source all their designs so artists compete to win the design of the day, and they've built this incredible community around the fact that they are just fun. I mean, you can see it certainly externally from their website and all the designs and the language that they use to describe things on their website. But you visit their office, and it's got this incredible graffiti painting everywhere. They've got a couple Airstream trailers in the warehouse. They've got a basketball court. I mean, everybody there that I've spoken with, and I've spent some time there talking to some of the folks that work there, and I just was so struck by the fact that people said, yeah, I took a job in the warehouse the marketing director took a job in the warehouse picking T-shirts because he wanted to work for this company because they were so funny. He eventually rose to the ranks of being the director of marketing at the organization. But I heard that time and time again, and I think that comes across, actually, as their brand. And in this case, it's really an amplification of their culture.
Well, talking about fun, John, tell us a little bit about your company name, Duct Tape Marketing.
Well,
tell me if you'd share how you came up with that. I mean,
yeah, sure.
It just makes me smile.
I often, you know, start the story by telling people about the advanced research and all the teams that I brought together to do surveying and focus groups, but, you know, that's actually all a lie. You know, I think that I came up with this name quite frankly because, and I will tell you, it's the best business decision I've ever made. I can't say that I made it consciously. I came up with this name probably because I am the ideal customer. I mean, I'd been a small business owner myself at that point for 15 years, and I think that probably the metaphor of duct tape marketing, and I will tell you that the reason I even went looking for my original company name was Jantz Communications. You know, nice, clever name, right?
Right.
And I went looking for a name because I was going to create a system. I mean, I wanted to work with small business owners and realized that I had a real challenge myself doing that unless I could figure a way to document and create this system where I could walk in and say, hey, here's what we're going to do, here are the results you can expect, and by the way, here's what it's going to cost. And if I was going to sell this systematic approach, I felt, you know, as any good marketer would, that it needed a brand name, it needed almost a product type of feel to it. So that's why I went looking for a name to begin with. And duct tape marketing just sort of came to me as the perfect metaphor for what it's like to own and operate and market a business, at least in my case and in the thousands of business owners I had dealt with at that point. It just represents this simple, effective, affordable, doesn't always have to be pretty, just has to work. And I think that it's certainly aided by this kind of strange affection that people have for all things duct tape, at least in this country. I do will say one challenge is that the book Duct Tape Marketing now has been translated into about 15 languages, and the translation
wow.
is the translation, you know, loses
oh, right,
quite a bit
of course.
in simple Chinese. It has been watered down to things like low cost marketing that is effective or something of that nature. But certainly in most English speaking countries, even in the UK and Australia, it holds. I mean, people come up to me almost every time I go out and speak and say I get it. You know, and boy, if you can
right.
you can capture that in three words, that's pretty special.
Well, your logo too is great. I mean, it puts sort of a smile on your face, and it's so interesting how many people feel, you know, when they're starting out that they need to have, you know, they need to be, you know, they're sort of, you know, their forehead is, what's the word, borrowed, or, you know, they're sort of frowning and they're looking serious and they have to come up with a professional, serious name for their new business. And, you know, I just think as we're catapulting through this 21st century, you know, fun is a very big piece in this world. And look at the name, even like Google, you know, I mean, and the bright colors. I mean, how wacky is that?
Yeah, I mean, what I was really after, and I, you know, I'm not, I'm no design expert by any means, but certainly I have spent a great deal of time understanding what this brand stands for. The one word, I'm a big fan of trying to come up with a word that can represent your brand, and the word for us has always been practical. And so that's our marketing strategy to some degree is to really embody that word practical. And so the name, the logo, any of the design, I mean, you know, even the design of our website and the colors we've chosen, and I'm not going to say that we nailed it 100%, but certainly the filter we use is what a small business owner who's willing, who is looking to take their business to the next level, find our design very practical and approachable, and that just the visual elements of our brand, you know, represent that word. And I think that that's a lesson, regardless of the business or the industry you're in, that should be a part of your kind of filtering and decision making process.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it should be effortless, right? People get it. I love that. Well, Tom, I just want to say I'd like you to dare our listeners with something that they might or challenge them to do something that they, based on your you know your toolkit and your strategies and your whole way of looking at small business marketing. What is one thing that perhaps in the world, it doesn't have to be about branding, but what is one thing that you might encourage them to do that they may not have thought about before that might be the most practical or the most obvious or the most simple, but it's something that may not be at the top of mind, so to speak?
Well, I don't know if this is going to meet the challenge of not being top of mind, except my experience is I don't come across many people that do this. So my dare is actually a two-part dare. The first is go out and hopefully you've identified three or four or five competitors, and go to their websites and copy the first paragraph that you encounter on their homepage off and paste that into a Word doc or something, and do that for all of them, and include your own as well. Then take the little highlighting tool that comes with Word, where you can black out words and black out any reference to any name of any of the companies on that page now that you've produced with five or six chunks of content. Mm-hmm. Pass that around the office and see if anyone can identify, A, any of the competitors, who they actually are, and B, which one comes from your site. You can, if you really want to be daring, take that out to your customers and see if they can do the same. One of the things that I have done this exercise numerous times, and what generally happens is that in some cases the owner of the business, because they're not maybe writing the web content, they're not really visiting and reading their homepage. In some cases, they can't even identify their own. And the real reason for that is because they come to the conclusion very quickly that everybody is saying the same thing about their particular industry, about their particular business. So that can be really eye-opening. But the second part of that, after you sit down and realize that point, nobody's making a difference, is then find 8 or 10 of your what I call ideal customers. And for that, that can simply be, gosh, if I had 5 or 6 more like that, life would be great. So 8 or 10 of them, and phone them up or go out and visit them and sit in front of them for 15 minutes and ask them questions like, why'd you hire us in the first place? You know, what do we do that others don't? Are there things in this industry that you wish, you know, were different? I mean, some questions like that really can start to get at the heart of what it is that you do that people value, that your best customers value. And what my experience there is that it won't be, especially if you push them, you know, if they say, well, you provide good service, say, well, what does that look like? Or tell me a time when we provided good service. And you start pushing them for those kind of stories. And my experience tells me is that a common theme will develop, and it's probably not a theme that you are using as your core message and pushing front in all of your marketing materials, and I'm going to suggest that you probably should.
Yes, that's so interesting, isn't it, John? It's a great, great challenge and dare, because I think that we're in our heads too much, and when you actually hear how other people perceive you, right, it really gives you major clues.
And a lot of times it's because of some of the things we're doing that people really appreciate, people really value, we just assume everyone's doing that. I can't tell you how many times I've come up with something and said, hey, here's what your customers are telling me they appreciate and that they don't get anywhere else. And a lot of times the owner of the business is floored. Really? Mm-hmm. Nobody else does that? That just seems like common sense. So a lot of times that's why those kind of real clear differentiators can hide from us.
How interesting. Well, is it true, do you think, John, that when you said you're your ideal customer? Remember you said that before when you started the business?
Yes, sure, yeah.
Is that I'm just going back to that because I'm just thinking about, in a way, our clients are often most like us. Is that too big a generalization to make?
No, I don't think it is. In fact, when I talk about ideal a lot of times to people, you know, certainly all the marketing speak like demographics and psychographics and behavior and all those things are important, but you know, sometimes in a very small business, a one-person shop, I mean, maybe you're working with 8 or 10 customers. Maybe what makes them ideal is you like being with them. You know, you have some of the same beliefs, and again, that doesn't always have to be the case. But in these really kind of hyper local small businesses that we have. You know, wanting to see somebody succeed, wanting to work with them, knowing that they value what you're doing, I mean, those can be big considerations. So I think that for a lot of small businesses, that naturally happens. You attract people that have the same idea about what value is and what service is and what fairness is, and I think that that can be a good thing. As I said, that doesn't have to be the case. You know, there certainly are businesses out there that sell a $29 product to tens of thousands of people that they will never meet. But I do think that even in those instances, the core message you're putting out in your marketing strategy and your culture and the way that your people all interact with those tens of thousands of folks will have a lot to do with who you attract and who has the emotional connection that's going to allow them or actually motivate them to go out and talk about your business and create referrals for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was terrific. Thank you, John. I really appreciate it. I just loved your dare. I haven't done that in a while. Maybe it's something I think it's something I might try doing.
I give presentations all the time, and I do my 7-step system, and a lot of times I'll get to that point and say I don't want to give you the easy way out here, but if you do nothing else, do this one step. I think it can be really profoundly powerful on a lot of levels. I mean, you might discover there's some things you better fix. With your best customers, so it's something that you probably ought to do, maybe quarterly even.
Mm-hmm. Excellent idea. Well, John, we only have a few more minutes. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us before you get back to your wonderful day?
Well, certainly I would invite people to visit ducttapemarketing.com, and that's DUCTTAPE marketing.com. I have a lot of free stuff there. I have a newsletter and a blog and a podcast, and I have an ebook we call 7 Steps to Small Business Marketing Success, and those are all things that if you want to get really a sense of what my thinking and teaching and even my methodology is all about, that's a great place to start.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also say that we have as you mentioned, we have this consultant network, we have our own Home Steady program and all those kinds of things that may make sense for you, but probably one of the best values that we have is the book Duct Tape Marketing, and the reason I say that is it's, I don't know, 308 pages of everything that at that point in my career I could think about marketing stuffed into a book that you can acquire for $14.95, and I think books, printed books are still probably or digital versions of those books are probably the best value, whether you get mine or somebody else's, some of the best value in terms of educational bang for buck.
Well, I've been on your site often, and I think even you've got a page for resources with so many links to all to various companies that offer, whether it's how to manage your tweets or do the video. I mean, so many wonderful resources. So absolutely, everybody, go to ducttapemarketing.com. John, thank you so much. Thank you for your generosity and willingness to share your brilliance here today. I really love meeting you and look forward to continuing the dialogue down the track.
You bet. My pleasure, Mary.
Okay. Until next time. Thank you, John.
You bet.
Bye-bye. That was John Jantz from Duct Tape Marketing. He was calling in. And go to his site, ducttapemarketing.com. He's got some great resources, and you'll really just very interesting guy. So I want to thank everybody for joining me today on New York Brand Lab Radio. It looks like a big storm here in New York. It's suddenly gone very, very dark outside. I love storms. Being the Dutch sea captain's daughter that I am, I always love stormy weather. So I want you all to have a wonderful week. I'll be here next week with actually one of the Etsy people from one of the largest online marketing sites that are growing in the world. And in the meantime, my site, my business, is zingyourbrand.com. It's how to bring your brand to a different level, giving it more energy and zing. And if you are in New York, in the middle of July, July 15th, I am holding my regular New York Brand Lab for 10 to 12 business people. There are 10 to 12 seats at the table. It's filling up fast. It's a full-day workshop, so if you're in the hood, I would love you to sign up or talk to me, see if it's the right mix and match for you, if you want to take your business to the next level and bring your brand to a new stratosphere. So listen, everybody, thank you for joining me. This is New York Brand Lab Radio. This is Mary Vanderweel signing off. Until next week.